From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of February, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. And a bit later in the program, TGM's Matt Bennett from Windsor, Illinois, will help us look at the cash grain market. Along the way today, we'll explore the oral argument made in Washington, D.C. at the Supreme Court this week in the Monsanto versus Bowman case. It's all about Roundup Ready soybeans and the genetic modification and the patent law that may extend far beyond agriculture. And we'll hear it all during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business, so Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day lower. The nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat down 17 and a quarter cents. Settlement price there at $7.21 and a quarter. In the March, the May contract at $7.24, down 21 and a quarter. In July, the harvest month, 20 cents lower at $7.28. The hard red in Kansas City finished $7.94 and three quarters on its settlement price, 6 3/4 of a cent lower. Now closes from the corn pit in Chicago, a dime lower in the nearby March at $6.90 and a half. The May at $6.85, down 11 and a quarter. And July at $6.73 and a half, down 9 and a quarter. September futures $5.73 and 3/4, down 7 1/2 cents. And December contract at $5.54, 7 1/2 lower. March corn at $5.63 and 3/4 for next year, down 8 1/4. March soybean futures were a nickel higher at $14.87 and 3/4. That is a settlement price. May futures at $14.70 and a half, up 2 for the day. And July futures were a penny and 3/4 lower at $14.54 and a half on their settlement. The August at $14.14, down 3 3/4. And November beans at $12.77 finished a dime lower. January of next year at $12.81 and 3/4, down 9 3/4. Bean meal at $4.37.60, up $4. Bean oil at $51.31, a settlement price down 76 cents. Live cattle futures finished the April at $127.82 and a half, down 40. And the Baleen hogs at $89.90 were down 47 and a half. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures, $93.36 a barrel, down $2.29. The RBOB gasoline at $3.03 and a half, that's 2 4/10 of a cent lower. And natural gas, and ethanol at $2.34 and 8 cents, that's 1 7/10 lower. The difference between the two is 68 7/10, that's about unchanged from yesterday. Now the natural gas, $3.24 and 3 cents, down in 3 3/6 cents for the day, and the heating oil, or the diesel fuel, at $3.10. That's 5 6/10 of a cent lower for the afternoon. Gold futures up 60 cents at $1,578.10, and the U.S. dollar at 81.46 is up 0.39 on the afternoon. Here's the weather forecast. An advisory remains in effect from 3 o'clock Central Time this afternoon until 6 a.m. tomorrow morning for a winter weather storm. The timing with the snow that should move in this afternoon after 3 o'clock. Heavier precipitation between 6 and midnight. This precipitation will mix with sleet, some freezing rain, especially this evening. Some lingering light snow or freezing drizzle after midnight in the area. That's in Urbana-Champaign. Accumulations. Snow of 1 to 2 inches expected, with some areas along I-72 as high as 3 inches. However, the ice will be more significant. That'll range from 1/10 to 2/10 of an inch, especially from around Mattoon northeast to Paris, so be careful in those areas. Winds out of the east will increase to 15 to 25 miles an hour, gust all the way to 30. They'll cause, of course, blowing and drifting snow. Conditions will deteriorate rapidly this afternoon once the precipitation begins, so go home earlier rather than later. Travel should become hazardous due, of course, to the poor visibility and roads quickly becoming snow-covered and icy. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is the 21st day of February, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us is Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises, normally in Mandeville, Louisiana today. He's a little further north, but not far enough north really to get into the ice, I suppose, just yet. Right, Dan?
Yeah, it's still pretty nice. I'm right south of Cincinnati on my way to Louisville. And the weather's real nice so far, but I think it's another day it'll be icy over here,
yeah.
I think.
So you've probably been watching not only the weather, but also what's been happening in Chicago and in D.C. this morning, of course. During the first session of the Ag Outlook Forums, the United States Department of Agriculture made a guesstimate of expectations for the coming year, and their number for corn acreage was much lower than most might have expected, at 96.5 million acres, the average season cash price at $4.80. What'd you make of that one?
Well, it's not surprising, but I think if we raise a 14.5 billion bushel corn crop, I think the price will be cheaper than $4.80. So I guess I would argue a little bit there. You know, this is just an exercise that we go through each year, and there's no doubt about it. When you pencil out a new crop balance sheet with the acreages that could be planted this spring, and if we have a normal type weather pattern, all of a sudden we begin to build stocks. And anytime you're, you know, in a stocks building mode, it is very difficult to get the market to do anything but drift downward, and there's where the downward pressure comes from. Old crop supplies are still very tight, but right at the moment the trade is all kind of focused on what the future is going to hold, and right now everything looks like, if we have everything normal, that we're going to build stock. So that is what, you know, puts downward pressure on the marketplace.
For that,
I think contributing, yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, for the last several weeks, you've been a bit of a contrarian to the market, which has wanted to push the price lower, but you've been friendlier than most, I suppose.
And I don't think, I still think some rally potentials are ahead of us. We're only, you know, 6-7 weeks into the calendar year. Statistically, the odds say that new crop corn and soybean futures will give us some better pricing opportunities than probably what we're seeing here, at least during the first 6 to 7 weeks of the marketing year. No one knows when that's going to happen, but I think statistically you still got to be in that mode that there will be some pricing opportunities. But I think, you know, to go along with today's bearishness, is the dollar stronger as the bond market looks real toppy in here, and it looks like we're headed to some higher interest rates. And if we are headed to some higher interest rates, that means people's going to want to own the dollar, and then that's going to put downward pressure in all commodities. I think that the fact that we're starting to see index funds move out of commodities, again, that's going to be a bearish influence. So at least right at the moment here, you know, the bear kind of has the ball. Everything seems to be wanting to go his way, at least in the short run here.
Did you make anything of the 77.5 million soybean planting acre and the 10.50 average price that USDA raised?
Well, my guess is that's probably low. My guess is that beans are going to be much more attractive to corn by the time the planters roll. And I think we'll maybe end up with a few more beans than probably what they're saying. And I actually think their corn number's probably low. I think for the most part, the trade probably feels as low. But, you know, a USDA form report is a USDA form report. But I think, you know, the day will pass, and the real numbers that's really going to move this market one direction or the other, for pretty much on the March 29th report. That'll tell us what kind of supplies we have on hand halfway through the marketing year. And that'll give us a little better idea, or that'll give us the first official survey of what farmers are thinking on acres. And those are going to be the big numbers. I think anything in between here is a lot of noise.
On the export side, do you see anything in the future for corn?
It's pretty dismal at the moment. Argentina, Brazil, they still have inventory, or South America has inventory to still supply the world market. I would think that they would be running nearly out, but it won't be too long. They will have fresh inventories to move into the world export market. So selling corn into the export market at the moment, especially with the larger world wheat inventories that the trade is starting to worry about, is going to be a struggle. Now, tomorrow's reports might not have a lot in them. You know, China was on Lunar New Year holiday. Brazil was in their Carnival holiday. So there's a lot of absence in the world export market last week. So I don't know what to kind of expect at tomorrow's export report. But I think next week's are going to be important, whether or not we see any pickup in bean demand. We had some sales cancellations from China on soybeans last week. We'll have to see whether or not we get any activity this week on cancellations. So I think that's what everybody's kind of watching for. If Brazil cancels more sales, China, but they were in the market earlier this week, and it just looks to me like that China demand may be strong enough that we're still going to continue to get a piece of it. It won't be as large as what we've been accustomed to, but I think as long as we sell them a few beans, that could really tighten up old crop soybean inventory levels pretty sharply.
Dan, stay safe on the road while you're out there.
Very well, Todd.
Thank you. That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. He's on the road just near Cincinnati, Ohio, on this Thursday afternoon. A couple of things. The weather forecast is not particularly good, so if you do need to make your way home, do that sooner rather than later, and snow should be coming. Some ice after 3 o'clock, most of it heaviest between 6 and 10 this evening. Be aware of that, and it has made one function that we had planned for this evening in Brandley, Illinois, not be canceled, but changed a bit. Dave Dickey and company will not be headed up to the Farm Credit Services meeting this evening. That meeting, however, in Bradley, Illinois, will take place just without the Will Ag panel. So if you're headed out there, you'll probably be able to make it and get back. But Dave and company aren't going to try to make it through all of those, rough roads that might be out there for this evening.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
This week, the United States Supreme Court took up a case between Vernon Hugh Bowman, an Indiana farmer, and Monsanto over patent rights, in particular over Roundup Ready, or the glyphosate resistance, and whether or not a self-replicating gene or patent might or might not be able to exhaust its patent. To help explain what that means and what the outcomes potentially might be, we've invited Brian Endrest, legal scholar at the University of Illinois and the College of ACES, to join us. Thank you so much, Brian. Can you tell me a bit more about the case, please?
Well, it was an interesting case because the seeds that Mr. Bowman planted were from the grain elevator. So they were commodity seeds as opposed to the seeds that you would normally buy from the seed dealer. And he was arguing that because these were, in essence, the third generation of seeds, any sort of patent rights that Monsanto would have had on these seeds were exhausted. So just to be clear, the first generation would be the seeds that Monsanto grows or contracts for growing, and then sells to the farmer through the network of seed dealers to plant and grow. The second generation of seeds are the seeds that everyone is planting and then sold to the grain elevator. And then it's this third generation of seeds. What do we do with those? Is there still patent? Do patent rights still exist on those third generations? Or has the patent been exhausted?
Yeah, so explain what is patented about these seeds. It's not the seed itself. It's a technology within a seed or a gene.
Well, that's a tough question, Todd, because a single seed will have multiple patents. There'll be, and so one of the patents would be the, actually, and I'm sorry, you can really get technical here, but one of the patents would be their using of a spraying of the plant. And actually that would be a patented activity, that you're spraying Roundup on the soybean seed.
Not the glyphosate resistance itself, but the spraying?
The spraying would be one. The glyphosate resistance itself would be one. And also the fact that you are making this new seed from the seed that you planted is actually making the invention, making that patented thing. So there's all sorts of patents wrapped up in there. But the simple thing is at what point do all these exhaust because they've been sold, and or do they survive this second, third, fourth, and multiple generations on?
So they had an oral argument. What does that mean?
Yeah. Oral argument is sort of the fun, and it's the public side of the Supreme Court. But the real bulk of it is in the written briefs that are submitted beforehand. And all the parties to the case, as well as amicus, which are third parties that have an interest in this, such as the American Soybean Association, or in this case also the government of the United States itself, submitted additional briefs. But oral argument is where the two parties and the U.S. government, if it wants to intervene, which it did in this case, go and present an argument, usually about 35 minutes for each side, before the justices of the Supreme Court in front of the public gallery. And it's an exciting time. If you've ever been in Washington and there's an argument going on, it's worth stopping by just to see the theatrics.
Have you been to one?
A couple of them, yes. And, you know, the Bowman case was one I would have liked to have gone and attended, but I just couldn't get out there this time.
Okay, so you've probably read, of course, the transcript of the oral argument. Did you read some of the briefs ahead of time as well?
I read, yep, sure, some of the briefs ahead of time. And of course, read the oral argument transcripts. And it really, at this point, is about posturing. You're trying to make your arguments in a way that are compelling, not only in your particular case, but explaining to the justices what the implications are going forward. Not maybe just in agriculture, but this case, because it dealt with a self-replicating technology, soybean seeds, could have applications in the software industry, could have applications in vaccines. And so the parties are trying to position themselves on the different sides of this, whether there should be a patent right or shouldn't be a patent right. So that's some of the underlying arguments that are going on.
How long will it take the Supreme Court to come to some kind of decision, and what are the possibilities?
Well, the decisions are, the Supreme Court term starts in October and it ends in the summer. And so all of the decisions will be out by this summer. As far as what could happen, the important part of your question. Well, the Bowman lost, the farmer lost at the trial court and the first court of appeals. And so it was interesting that the Supreme Court even took this case. So if the Supreme Court decides to grant Bowman the relief he's wanted, in other words, that there's no patent rights, you could certainly see an expansion of commodity seeds being planted. Or, I think Monsanto would have to relook its business practices. There would be certain upheaval in the market. If Monsanto wins, the defendant in this, or the respondent is what we'll call it in this case, if they win, well, then it'll be pretty much business as usual, in that you know, sort of what you said in the beginning, Todd, about people just know that they can't save seeds and replant them. So that'll sort of be preserving the status quo.
You and I had a discussion very quickly before we opened the microphones about the difference between commodity seeds and bin run seeds. I think much of our agricultural audience will understand a commodity seed is the one that's sold at the elevator and goes into all kinds of things, but bin run might be saved back and actually meant to be used as the second generation or third generation planting. Did the Supreme Court understand eventually the difference between those two?
I think they eventually understood the difference, but keep in mind you have nine justices that are dealing with a wide range of topics, and that's the job of the attorneys presenting the case, to make those justices understand through the briefs that they've written in advance, as well as through oral argument. And by the end of the argument, you could see, okay, the justices started to grasp the issue and understand what was really going on here.
When they make their decision, do you suppose they will be able to grasp that difference in the decision itself and separate the two?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident that they will, yeah. They get it right, and the decisions they craft are very precise, and they're also just not looking at resolving, again, this particular case. They're going to try to resolve it to solve this as a matter of policy going forward.
Thank you so much, Brian.
You're welcome.
Brian Endres, Ag Law Specialist at the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Let's check the cash grain market on a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line, Matt Bennett at TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Basis levels are doing what today?
Oh, they've been pretty strong here recently. And, you know, certain processors in the Midwest are kind of hunting for both corn and beans. And so we really haven't seen any basis deterioration for us personally, at least.
And they've been getting a much better deal on both of those as prices continue to fall.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, it's been pretty interesting to watch this, especially watch these beans. You know, we've just had a wild, wild ride in beans, especially on the cash market. And so, you know, a lot of these guys that said they were going to sell beans whenever they got back to $15, we're having to take them to the task now and see whether they're going to go ahead and do it or not.
Do you think they will, or will they wait her out still?
Well, you know as well as I do, some of them are going to, and some of them are going to change their game plan and maybe wait for 16. So,
my guess is you think that they should take, even what's less than 15 if it's there still.
Yeah, I really think so. I just think these are great prices. Obviously, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, and we could go on up. But historically speaking, and as far as what most guys grew that were in my area, that's an extremely profitable level selling at $15.
And what are your bids for the day?
Oh, cash corn, 702, fall, 529. Cash beans are $15, and fall, 1247.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with TGM. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. A couple of quick notes. The Ag Outlook panel that's scheduled for this evening in Bradley, Illinois, has been canceled, but the event itself has not. So if you're headed to the First Farm Credit Services event, you can still make that this evening in Bradley, Illinois, but Dave Dickey and Company will not be there. The other item is that you can look online at willag.org if you want to see some of the numbers that came from the Ag Outlook in Washington, D.C., the forum. We've posted them there at willag.org. Back in 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the weather forecast.
Monday. Of course, a key ingredient is cinnamon, which originated in Sri Lanka. Marco Polo is credited with bringing cinnamon on a large scale to Europe. Modern sticky buns likely had their roots in medieval fritters. The sticky bun came to Philadelphia with 18th century English and German immigrants. On this day in agricultural history, in 1741, Jethro Tull died. He was an English agriculturalist and inventor whose ideas were instrumental in the development of modern English agriculture. One of his inventions was a horse-drawn seed planting drill that sowed 3 even rows of seed at once. The music group Jethro Tull was named for him. In 1858, Edwin T. Holmes sells the first electric burglar alarm in the U.S. in Boston, Massachusetts. His workshop was, by the way, used later by Alexander Graham Bell. In 1895, Carl Peter Henrik Dam was born. Dam was a British biochemist who discovered vitamin K in 1939. In 1985, Nathan Pritikin died. He was a nutritionist who believed that exercise and a low-fat, high unrefined carbohydrate diet helped reverse his own heart disease. He founded the Pritikin Longevity Center in 1976. In 1989, on this date, the USDA approved Simplese as a low-calorie fat substitute. In 1994, Whirlpool began manufacturing a refrigerator that was significantly more efficient and did not use Freon. Freon has been implicated in the destruction of ozone in the atmosphere. And that's this date in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
This is the closing market report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Pete Leavitt not available to be with us this afternoon. We do have some serious weather to talk about, though, as a winter weather advisory is in effect for much of the area. That's starting at 3 o'clock Central Time this afternoon, not too far away now, within the half hour for most of us, and it'll run all the way through tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Central Time. The snow should move into the area around 3 o'clock today. Heavier precipitation between 6 and mid night, and then precipitation will mix with sleet and freezing rain, especially this evening. Some lingering light snow or freezing drizzle will come after midnight, but most of it between, 6 and midnight tonight. Accumulations, 1 to 2 inches of snow expected with some areas along I-72 as high as 3 inches. However, ice accumulations will be more significant, ranging from 1/10 to 2/10 of an inch, especially from around Mattoon northeast to Paris. Winds out of the east will increase between 15 and 25 miles an hour, the gust all the way to 30. That'll cause some blowing and drifting snow. And the impact, of course, will be conditions that deteriorate rapidly once the precip begins. Travel should become hazardous due to poor visibility, some roads becoming quickly snow-covered and icy. The potential for some freezing rain or freezing drizzle tonight will only make driving conditions even more hazardous. Some power outages also expected in possible areas with significant ice accumulation. So if you live on the farm and you've got wires hanging, you can expect that you might be prepared for that this evening. We will take a look at the weather forecast for tomorrow as well. A chance of snow, freezing drizzle, that'll all become in sight before noon, and then a slight chance of rain after that. Cloudy and a high of 37 degrees on a southeast wind tomorrow at 10 to 14 miles an hour, and then winds could gust as high as 18. Chance of precipitation during the day tomorrow set at 30%. On Friday night, mostly cloudy and 22. Saturday, partly sunny and 32. And Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low of 19 degrees. By the time we get to Sunday this week, sunny skies, or next week, I should say, mostly sunny, and a high of 37. Sunday evening, partly cloudy and 25. Monday, a chance of rain and snow, mostly cloudy for the start of the work week, a high near 41 degrees on Monday. And then on Monday evening, a chance of snow and rain, cloudy and 31 degrees. Tuesday, a chance of rain and snow as well, cloudy and a high of 41. Tuesday night, cloudy with a low of 28. And Wednesday next week, mostly cloudy and a high near 38 degrees. You can always check out the weather forecast on our website. The address there is willag.org, willag.org. There is a special weather segment for the ag weather over on the right-hand side. If you'd like to see what the latest ag weather for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet might be, you could check that out as well. We post all of our programming not long after it airs on our radio stations. Have a safe afternoon, and head out early if you get the opportunity.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.